Okay.
Like,
do you want your complimentary parka?
I have
big, huge bear mittens.
Ooh, bear mittens. With the mittens get cold?
Made out of alpaca fur.
Did it cause?
No.
Well, then I don't want them.
Yikes.
Yeah.
See me
clawing
my way around.
Clawing your way to the top.
All right. Yeah,
Mike, let's raise that. And
follow along. Oh, sure.
Testing, 1, 2, 3.
Would you like to follow
testing,
along?
Testing, 1, 2, 3.
Perfect.
Your choice. Tina.
Testing, good morning.
Mike,
1, 2, 3.
I've got an extra one. You want to follow? Hey.
Welcome to the Combat Radio Network. This is Three Men and a Microphone, recorded inside the Iron Mike Studio, located in the Military Exchange on Route 332 in Canandaigua. Three Men and a Microphone is an opinion show based on the ins and outs, the news, politics, and scuttlebutt about town and the city of Canandaigua. Beautiful, historical Canandaigua, New York, where the hops grow higher, the grapes grow sweeter, and the sun always shines. In conjunction with 1310 AM, Canandaigua. Three men and a microphone, all the way from Rochester to Geneva, New York. I am your host, Corporal Tim Thornton, and this is Three Men and a Microphone. And we'll be right back after these messages.
Want to kill this light again?
Research.
I think it worked out really well last time.
Yeah, you look good.
Yeah, when the lights are off, I look even better.
I noticed Tim didn't get much face time.
Welcome to Canandaigua 1310 WKR. This is Three Men and a Microphone with that girl.
This girl, Tina Bloom.
Mike Yarger from Canandaigua 2020.
Good morning.
And our videographer, Melissa Walker, and also part-time co-host, and myself, Corporal Tim Thornton from, of course, Three Men and a Microphone and Civil War Radio and
Iron Mike's Military Exchange.
That's right. So if who would like to open up our show?
We're going to have
Canada.
Tina lead us in.
All right, let's kick it off. I think some of the biggest news politically coming out of this area this week was Brian Kolb announcing his gubernatorial run against Andrew Cuomo.
Right.
So local Canandaigua guy, Republican, going to go against a big downstate powerhouse as a Democrat. I'm excited. I think Brian Kolb would be a tremendous addition and a great governor. What are your thoughts?
I'm holding out. Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. I like Brian. Okay. Don't get me wrong. And pretty much, I would vote for anybody other than Andrew Cuomo.
Well, who wouldn't? Yeah.
But I don't know who else is going to throw their hat in the ring, right?
I thought they mentioned last night. I heard Senator Helming say that there's like two or three more.
There might be.
So
you know,
there are other people that, of course, I don't even know their names. The only thing I do know is once I heard a soundbite from a guy from the Syracuse region, and I liked what he had to say.
Okay.
Last night at the Conservative Committee, Brian had a stand-up where he was able to ask questions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I would say my question wasn't well-received. So...
Okay. What was the question?
I'm holding out. Well, it was more of like a misdirection. I said last election was the time to come out because that's when New York City does not come out the strongest, is in between elections, election year. I didn't use the word election year though. So it would have been really great if a stronger candidate that can really get the Republican support from the Republican committee, which Astorino did not get. People were told to stand down. Don't take pictures with him. He was, I didn't realize that I had his running mate on the show with us.
You're talking about Astorino right now?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I liked the running mate a lot. I would like to see him run for governor. I liked him. He was a sheriff. And I can't remember his name now, but I won't even try to say it. So, anyways, it's interesting to know that the Republican committee really didn't back the last guy running against Cuomo, which you think, in always, that whoever's in power, like the Republican committee, that they would back whoever's running. They would always put our full force behind it, but that's not the case. So whoever we back this time had better have the Republican backing, money, support, and of the people who are actually in the state Senate and Congress. So saying all that, when I asked my question, I got told, no, you got that wrong. That New York City does come out during the election year the strongest. Well, that's what I said. But I was wrong. Then he gave us his reasons why he can win against New York City. And I liked his stance. I like what he said. He has a battle plan. And we need that. Because I don't care what you say. You think you can win it on upstate alone. I don't buy that.
Not at all.
You better be able to, like he said, at least pick, I want to say pick off, but...
Pick up
one out of every three in order to lower that and then take everything from Long Island, maybe Staten Island, all the way up.
Yeah.
So you got to really campaign and, you know, Middletown, and then you got to find some way to win Buffalo, which we didn't last time. So anyways, it's okay. It's not the first time I've met Brian Kolb, and we'll just have to wait and see.
Stay tuned for other candidates.
Right.
For sure. Another thing coming out this week was Tony Stewart and that wrongful death lawsuit. He had hit and killed Kevin Ward Jr. August of 2014 on the dirt racetrack here in Canandaigua. The judge refused to throw out the lawsuit for wrongful death, so it's going to be heading to a jury trial.
Right, which kind of surprised me because previously they had said, well, okay, there was a contract signed, so, you know, he essentially put his own life at risk just by driving the cars and whatnot. But then when he got out of his own car and went after Stewart,
yeah.
Or went after, you know, and then got hit by Stewart, I mean, to me, that just seemed like a clear case of, you know, accidental death, really. I mean, there was no way that could have been avoided. I've watched that tape numerous times.
I think a lot of us had, yeah. And let me preface it by saying thoughts and prayers to the family of Kevin Ward Jr.
Right.
But it seemed like a couple of hotheads out there, him and Tony Stewart combined.
Right.
My question is, if this wasn't this big NASCAR guy that just happened to be down here in Canandaigua racing, would we be pushing this hard to, you know, with a lawsuit? Or is this just a money grab?
Right. We'll have to wait and see, I guess.
Definitely. What you got, Mike?
Okay, so you were talking about the state, and I want to go on that a little bit. Andrew Cuomo was talking this week about taking guns away, right?
Oh, he always talks about taking
guns
away.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
Kind of a theme.
So they're talking about if, you know, in a domestic violence situation, they want to be able to take the guns away. And let me say that I support that, okay? If you're convicted of a felony domestic violence situation, you ought not have any guns. Okay. However, we're talking a conviction. We're not talking being charged. Okay. And there's now the way the governor's talking about this, he wants to be able to take your guns away even if somebody alleges that you committed some type of a domestic violence situation. And that I don't agree with. I mean, there are just too many false allegations made in domestic violence situations. And for the state to then come in and say, okay, we're going to grab your guns, I don't think that's right.
So here's the thing. They already do it. If you and,
right.
You and
they
I
do.
Are a couple, me
right.
and Mike.
Okay.
They're a really cute couple, too, if you could. Well, you can see them. You can see them. Look at them. That's kind of adorable. Heartwarming, really.
They get into an argument, and say it gets physical. Mike hits me, right? They're going to, first thing they're going to do is, either one of you got guns? Okay, well, one of you is getting charged, so we're going to give you a ticket to appear in court. But tonight, right now, or the very next day, for sure, they will come back and take those guns. That's policy now.
Right.
To hold them until this is settled and we straighten out our differences and go on. So it's already part of policy to take away, and we're not talking just pistols. Pistols, long guns. Guys are always in the store saying, I got into an argument, and the first thing they did was confiscate my guns.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have to go to court and not only deal with the domestic dispute, but I also have to fix this. Like, I have to try to get or move out and prove, you know. Anyway, so it's already policy. What really he should be doing, if I were governor, we should be addressing the mental health issue. That's the only issue with gun control that needs addressing. Everything else, there's enough laws in place.
I'm a big proponent of gun rights and your right to bear arms. However, in domestic events like this, we know it's pretty well established that these are the most dangerous for individuals and law enforcement combined. So if you're going into a situation where somebody's fighting in their own home, yeah, it's dangerous. So I don't know. I don't know where I stand on that, but again, more to be seen.
Okay.
I'd like to say, though, even if you're not, if you're divorced, and I could be misspoken about this, but in New York State, I believe, is the only state that does this, you have to get permission from your ex-husband or ex-wife to get a gun permit. They have to fill out this form for the application, which I think is absurd, because they could not do it out of spite, personal vendetta, and I just don't feel that's right.
So you're saying I have to give permission before my ex-wife?
Yes, you have to fill out a part of the form for the application process.
Oh, I hope so.
I hadn't heard that. See, I hadn't heard that it was permission. For an application for a gun, I believe what you do have to do is fill out, have you been married before? You know, have you lived with somebody before? Write it down. They'll contact that person as a point of reference, but I don't think they have a yay or nay vote in it.
Well, you got to admit, what they do is when you go for a pistol permit, they call everybody on your list.
Oh, yeah, they do.
And I get lots of calls for people. And, you know, who knows you better than your spouse? I mean, even if it's, they have ability to judge, you know, whether it's spiteful or not, or whether it's makes sense or tactful. So, I don't know. Who knows you better? Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay. So, we learned this week, Sheriff Pavero issued a warning to people in the area about bank card skimmers. And these are devices that are being put onto the gas station pumps and collecting people's debit and credit card information. And we don't know, Sheriff Pavero didn't say which gas stations this was occurring at. Certainly some of the people in the community know what gas stations this is occurring at. But Sheriff's statement didn't name any place. He just said be on the lookout for these credit card skimmers.
So how do you identify these? How do you know that they're there? I know one of the ways is on the gas pump. They have that tape that like seals it, and if that's broken,
that's bad.
Could be due to a number of things, but that could mean that a skimmer was placed. Are there other ways to know?
There's one of my customers, but we'll start calling the third man in the room because I get a lot from customers. He said he jiggles it. If it moves, it's a fake one on top of another one. And if that tape's not there, go to another pump. I would even go to another station.
Yeah.
Right.
And really, honestly, you should just pay cash inside. Stop using your card.
Who carries cash anymore, though?
Right.
I know it's hard, but let me tell you, that is one of the major ways they get you, is at the gas pump.
Okay.
But, by the way, speaking of gas pump, I just want everybody to know, we in Ontario County here in Canandaigua pay at least 25 cents
more per gallon.
And everybody else, as soon as you leave and get to the next town, and I just drove from the thruway all the way down to the public safety building, went over by Runnings, and it's still $2.49, if not higher. And you go to Rochester, and it's $2.26. So when I asked over at Speedway, I said, "Well, why is that?" Well, we're allowed to charge more regionally. So even though we're a tourist town, and certainly not one in the wintertime, we're going to pay more.
That's significant. That's
25 cents a gallon is a lot. People would always make a profit at 2 or 3 cents a gallon, and that was more than enough. 25 cents? That's highway robbery.
Okay, and even if you go to Geneva, you'll find that the gas prices in Geneva, actually, the closer you get to the Indian Reservation in Waterloo, you'll see the gas prices go lower and lower. So the lowest gas prices in this area would be on the Indian reservations.
How low are they?
I don't know what they are right now because I usually gas up at Costco. I have a membership to Costco, so that's where I gas up.
I'm going to buy my flour, my cigarettes, my booze, my cigars, and my gas all at the reservation.
I go to Cayuga out of Seneca Falls, and it's like $2.14 a gallon or so.
Right, see?
It's very cheap.
Right. So then you're competing, if you're gas station Waterloo, you're competing against that. So you got to lower your price. And then Geneva, well, you're not that far from Waterloo, and, you know, you're close. So the gas prices are a little higher in, or a little bit higher in Geneva than they are in Waterloo. But then you hit Canandaigua, and it's like, well, nobody's going to drive to the Seneca Reservation to get their gas, and so we're going to keep our gas prices high. So
got
to
be competitive.
Yeah.
Let's soften things up. I mean, we're getting all fired up. There's going to be a live nativity this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, at the First United Methodist Church in Canandaigua. This used to be at Life Spring Baptist Church. This is the first year it's going to be at the Methodist Church on Main Street. They're going to have animals. They're going to have actors. It sounds like it's going to be pretty amazing. 73 volunteers coming out to do this. Live performances, again, Saturday and Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m., and it's free.
Okay.
So what a great way to get
so
into
live?
The
like
Christmas
a real,
season.
Real
yeah.
baby?
Yes, it probably is a real baby because my son and daughter-in-law had a baby last year that was a few months old before Christmas time, and they actually used that baby in their nativity
play. You put that little baby in a wooden manger?
In the play. I don't know if it was a wooden I mean, at least that one was indoors, right?
Oh, yeah,
this one
yeah.
here, I'm well, assuming is going to be outside.
Right, that's what
right?
I'm wondering.
Yeah, if you got live animals, I'm assuming they're not marching those through the church, so.
That's for sure.
You I know. Want to be one of the little naked cherubs.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I know. Moving right along.
Well, is that or the donkey? I take a good donkey.
I got a good one for you, too. Patty's Place is going to hold their 23rd annual Christmas dinner. And they're serving pork roast, mashed potatoes, veggies, and dessert. That's going to be the Elk Club on Niagara Street, 19 Niagara Street, from 11 o'clock in the morning to 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
So you just said Patty's Place, but you mean Patty Hotchkiss now, since Patty's Place has been
right.
sold.
Right, so Patty's Place has always done this, but
right.
Patty sold off her restaurant. So instead of having it at the restaurant like they traditionally mm-hmm. did, they're having it at the Elks Club, and it's going to be Christmas Day, and they're inviting anybody in the community who wants to come out and break bread with
just
them.
Like she did on Thanksgiving.
Just
want
right.
to make sure we're giving credit where credit's due. This isn't Patty's Place, the restaurant that's doing this.
That's
is Patty
correct.
Hotchkiss,
Patty
the former
Hotchkiss.
Owner.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. Terrific.
So.
Cousin to Amanda Hotchkiss. Or Hug and Kiss.
Yeah, that's a different story, Tim. We'll,
well,
get,
getting,
we'll get to
getting,
that one.
I'm bitter because I fell for it.
Okay, we're not quite ready to go into that one yet. But Canandaigua School Board approved last night the Pinnacle North pilot change. And it was interesting because that was a 5-3 vote. And one person abstained. Okay. And the Canandaigua City Council was a 5-4 vote.
Right.
So these votes, I mean, it might, well, you know, you've gotten defeated. Well, yes, we did. But I'll tell you, a couple of years ago, this would have been like a 9-0 or 8-0 vote. So I think the people who are opposing these businesses getting these tax breaks are starting to have an impact in the community. They're starting to change some minds. And so I was kind of pleased to see that. Also, I'm happy to report that Beagle Bo has returned home to his Hosley Road address in Shortsville.
Well, Beagle Bo was found.
Yeah, it was reported he was missing, and fortunately he was found. There was a request for people to shovel out their fire hydrants this week, and I think that's very important. I own a building on Main Street. We have a fire hydrant right in front of the building. My building dates from about 1850s, so it's not a new building, and it would be a real loss to the community if it ever went up in smoke. So every time it snows, I make sure I'm down there and we shovel out that hydrant because I want to make sure that my, you know, that the firemen have access to that hydrant in the event something occurs in my building. We actually did have a very small fire there one time.
That's so. A good reminder now that we have some snow,
that's right.
You know, to be a good citizen and dig out your fire hydrant. If you have one on personal property or around you, just it takes a couple minutes. You're already out there with your shovel. Help out the fire department.
Right.
You have big old bow. Come visit the hydrant.
Yeah, there you go.
He'll get rid of the snow.
Right.
It'll be yellow.
Give Bo a lot of water.
That's right.
Now, the other thing you have to be concerned about when the weather gets colder like this is having jars and cans of food outside. So Noah's Blessing Box, 99 Chapin Street, they're asking that you not put jars or cans of food into the blessing box. They're putting a lot of, like, ramen noodles and things like this out there, which is fine in the cold weather.
Good point.
And if you need something like canned or jarred food, you can go up and knock on their door. If they're home, they do have stores of things that they can give away. So that's important to keep in mind. Hey, this Sunday, the 17th, you have an opportunity to visit actual reindeer. There's a farm out in Shortsville that has a couple reindeers, and they're inviting the public to come out between the hours of 1 or 2 o'clock on this Sunday, the 17th, and it's at 4285 Shortsville Road in Shortsville. So if you want to get a picture of your little ones with these reindeer, it would make a great Christmas card, right?
How cool is that?
Yeah, how cool is that?
Mike, can you name all 8 of Santa's reindeer?
Well, there's... No.
Don't you sing it?
You don't want to hear me sing on the radio.
All right.
Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, Vixen, Comet, Cupid, Donner, Blitzen.
Nice.
But do you recall?
Nicely done. I'm impressed. But two out of the 8 are going to be there in Shortsville.
Yeah, 2 out of the 8 are going to be there.
Very cool. Did you know the Morgan Samuels Inn is being auctioned?
I did. Did you? Now, that auction has ended.
It has. So 44 acres, 1810 historic mansion, 4 diamond AAA rated. I didn't realize this was like a hot commodity
out there. Right, high-end
inn. For sure. Bed and breakfast inn, once owned by the famed Morgan family from Montreal, and later a New York gubernatorial candidate, Howard Samuels.
Right.
Do you know what Howard Samuels invented?
If I'm not mistaken.
Beer? No, that's
plastic,
Sam Adams.
Plastic bags, right?
Plastic bags.
Yeah.
Yeah, he invented the inventor of the plastic bag.
And now we got Mobile Chemical down here producing plastic bags. I wonder if there's a connection.
So it'll be interesting. I don't think, I haven't seen public record yet as to who won that auction.
Okay, so that's what I was wondering. Because the last time I looked, the bidding was up to like $235,000.
That's not bad at all. It was a sealed bid.
Right. That was a steal if it was able to be sold for that amount.
Absolutely.
I think it's assessed for over $500,000.
Okay.
So,
easily. Well, all that property, too. And
right.
You would
40
know,
acres.
Like, yeah. And being an old place like that, it's going to require someone who can put in money for upkeep and, you know.
Right. I hear the septic system on the property really needs some work.
Okay.
So maybe that's why it went a little under what its assessed value
but
was.
But hopefully we can bring it back as an inn because I know
hopefully.
A lot of people really enjoyed that. It drew some tourism. It was a good place for folks to stay if you didn't want to stay in a traditional hotel or motel in the area.
Yeah. So it should be noted, too, and I didn't post this on Canandaigua 2020, but it's an interesting story. Over in Geneva, they have a property for sale that's only $50,000. And what it is an observatory, a telescope observatory from back in the 1800s. And this guy who owned this building, it's only like 450 square feet. The entire building is only 450 square feet.
Oh, my goodness.
Right? But it has this dome on it, and it was an observatory, and they actually discovered some comets or planets or things like this right over here
in Geneva.
And you can own that for $50,000. So might be something to consider.
Someone's going to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. But I thought that, you know, those were two interesting properties I saw on the market this week. And I thought, ooh, somebody's going to pick up some bargains.
Definitely.
So what else you got?
Let's see. The Burn Dairy on Main Street. Rumors that that's going to be closing.
Right.
A little bit of concern by folks on Main Street who like to walk to that area or live in the city. And that's their main hub for grocery staples. So that's a concern. The Nolan's Rebuild Grant came through, which I know a few people are up in arms about that.
Right. That was $416,000 that came through on a community development block grant.
Block grant. So block grants, as we know, are supposed to impact that entire area. And right now it seems that all these funds are going just to the Nolan's project. So
right. But basically the argument is that this is supposed to be creating jobs once this property gets rebuilt. There had previously been about 100 jobs there, about 50 of them full-time and about 50 of them part-time, And after this rebuild, because it'll be a larger property and whatnot, it should add about an additional 50 jobs there. So that's the argument for the grant. But a lot of people have arguments against the grant as well.
Sure. Also, I just want to give a shout out to some of the folks on Canandaigua 2020 who have been putting up some amazing photographs. There are some amazing amateur photographers on that site.
Right. So have you seen the pictures by Steve Eichhorn?
So is he the one that's done the cardinals?
Yeah, all the birds. The
blue gosh.
Jays, the cardinals, the... I can't remember what the other birds were.
No,
Morning Dove. Morning Dove was another one.
Oh, the one that was kind of smiling.
With the spots on it back.
Yeah. No,
so.
And some people, I mean, shoot the lake and just different scenes. Beautiful area captured really well by the Canandaigua 2020 folks. So keep it coming. Thanks for doing that. It brightens my day when I see those pictures.
And speaking of beautiful views.
As you're looking right at me. Aww.
Our largest story this week had to do with Amanda Hugginkiss. And Amanda was really upset about the views of the lake being blocked by the boathouses.
Mm-hmm,
and she
mm-hmm.
wanted to have the boathouses done away with, torn down, get
right.
them out of there.
Yeah.
You know, it's really creating a problem. And the interesting thing about this story is, even though it was the biggest story on Canandaigua 2020 this week, it wasn't a real story.
It was
right?
satire.
They
people took it seriously
right.
again.
But there were lots of people who fell for it.
Yeah.
And that was, Kent Fletcher, I mean, the guy is a comic genius. He's a satirist of the first rate order. There were over 500 comments on that one.
Some people were upset, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, dear. Read the whole thing.
Well,
right.
You guys got me. I asked you who you're going to interview on the show this week.
Right.
And then you said Amanda Hugginkiss, which it's Mike, not Tina, that did it.
Thank
right.
you. Thank
and
you.
I,
right.
And I said, I go, well, what does she do? And you guys just left me hanging. Nobody said.
Well, I assumed that you had already seen the story.
No, I had no idea. I completely believe that was a real name. So we posted, Melissa and I posted our own video, and we brought in Juan Chiaz. Right, with Bob the Indian, and I don't know if you guys haven't seen it, but we did a
right.
pre-video.
Very cool. Very
yeah,
cool.
We're having fun. Had
All
a
right.
little cigar, spoke a little Italian.
You know, we were talking about school boards, too. The Marcus Whitman School District passed their capital project.
A big one.
Right. 236 in favor versus 156 against. And I haven't had a chance. I know people who are in the Marcus Whitman School District, but I really don't understand what exactly the vote was for.
Mm-hmm.
I know it was some improvements of building and facilities and things of this nature. But one of my pet peeves is all the school districts are moving in the direction of putting artificial turf in on their fields. And I don't know if this project included that or not.
Good question.
I'm hoping
either.
It doesn't, because I have a real problem with using artificial grass in our school system. So,
well, that was a significant expenditure for the Marcus Whitman School District, and
it was
really split 50-50 when I was hearing comments from folks in that district.
Right.
And don't quote me, but I think if you had a home valued at $200,000 of assessed value, your taxes were going to go up something roughly $140 a year, something like that. So this isn't, you know, a few pennies on the dollar that you're going
right.
to be seeing a change.
This isn't a cup of coffee, as
this
they
isn't.
Often say.
Right.
But the other thing is, the other part of that was, I think the state picks up 90% of the cost of these construction projects. And from what I understand, this has been long overdue. And
Marcus
apparently,
Whitman isn't huge. So, I mean, you're spreading that cost across a smaller population of folks.
Right.
So.
Right. So I hate when the stories that make the news are stories about Canandaigua 2020. But that was certainly the case this week.
Mm-hmm.
We had Caitlin Davis ranting about the rude and degrading folks on Canandaigua 2020. Okay, and what I found real interesting about this was the fact that Caitlin has never reported anybody to the administrators for being rude or degrading to other people. And the administrators and moderators on the site, and there's five of us, do the best we can to keep it respectful. And, you know, I'm not going to kick somebody off because they use the F word or something of that nature. But, you know, if somebody's physically threatening another person on there, they certainly will get kicked off.
And I've seen that happen with
we will kick people off.
People, so. We will. That should be Canada 2020 slogan. We will kick you off. No, But one of the things that I found even more troubling about Caitlin's post is she's like, people just come on here to rant and rave, and they're so upset. What's she on there doing? Ranting and raving.
What's right.
Wrong with that? No, right. And it's still a private page, guys. So this isn't something that's run by a municipality
right.
or a government. Where
and actually, at one time, they did have one. The city had a page like that, and they shut it down.
Right.
And that's what led to Canandaigua 2020 starting to begin with.
Which is almost to 11,000 folks
yeah,
now.
Yeah, we're approaching that.
Yay.
So, I think we've done a good job, and considering the number of people on there, I think it's a very sociable page.
Agreed.
So,
agreed.
Let's put it that way. And we're at the 2-minute mark, so before we run out, I want to do this story. Instacart, have you used it yet?
I have not. You're talking about Wegmans, right?
Well, it's not just Wegmans.
Okay.
Tops now offers a service, too. And it's actually not something that is run by Wegmans or Tops. Instacart is its own entity, and they have personal shoppers who go in there. They'll shop for you, right? Bring the groceries to your home. Many of the drivers will unload the groceries from their cars and take it into your house for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tip them on there. I thought it was a really interesting service. Now, I'm not one who uses that type of thing. My wife isn't one who would use that type
of
thing. When she goes grocery shopping, she wants to be able to pick out the produce that she wants. She wants to be able to pick out the meat that she wants.
I was just going to say, I have fun shopping for anything, groceries included.
Right.
So I enjoy going out to Wegmans and buying stuff. I love to cook. So like your wife, I like to pick the things I'm going to put in ingredients, you know, whether it's brands or the way things look. I'm sure for some people who are busy that hate going to the store,
well, imagine having four kids and having to load up these kids in the car seats and everything, then going off to the store, then getting the shopping cart out there with the, you know, I mean, that's got to be a real hassle when you got kids like that.
I imagine
back in the day when my kids were young, it was something we might consider. But it's certainly not something that we need, but a lot of people seem to be really enjoying the services, and I'm glad that it's something that's being offered. It runs from 9 o'clock in the morning to midnight.
Okay.
So as long as the stores are open, up until midnight, you can get deliveries. Apparently, you can't get deliveries of beer or cigarettes,
mm-hmm.
so we can't keep our drunk driving record down by having Instacart delivered the beer to you. And apparently that's a New York State regulation that maybe they can get changed. So that's something I'd like to see happen.
No. What do you think? Wrapping it up.
I like it. I think we had a great show. I'm glad everybody came down today. I want to remind everybody that we have a Toys for Tots box.
Oh, and that's filling up, isn't it? I mean, they're doing a great job over here. You probably got, what, about a foot or so of space left there to be filled?
No, I'll be filling up.
I'm sure it will.
This weekend.
Yeah.
And then they pick it up on Monday. So they were actually here already to pick it up. I had to hold them off.
Oh, okay.
And get a few more toys for the kids for this year. And it's great.
And that's a Marine Corps initiative, right? Toys for Tots?
Marine Corps League.
Yep.
Okay.
I believe the reserves gave it over to the Marine Corps League.
Super.
Yeah.
Well, everybody have a great weekend. Stay warm.
You too.
Enjoy.
Thanks, Tina. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Melissa.
Yeah, and thanks for tuning in and turning on.
That's right. See you next week.
The Military Exchange.
Welcome to Canandaigua 1310, Three Men and a Microphone. This is WOKR 1310, and this is Civil War Radio with Armin Marinetti, Miss Tina Bloom, Mike Yarger.
Good morning.
Melissa Walker, and our guest today, retired Sheriff Lieutenant Bob Green, Supervisor for the Town of Bristol, Chairman of Ontario County Public Safety, and he is running for Ontario County Sheriff 2018. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thank you for having me here, Mike. It's a pleasure.
How are you today? And if you could, of course, our panel will probably have questions, but if you could tell us a little bit about your background and then your platform.
Certainly. Absolutely. Thank you. As you introduced me, I had 30 plus years with the Sheriff's Department and retired at the rank of lieutenant. Went on to work for Homeland Security here in New York State as a senior police trainer. During that time period, I developed a number of training programs within the agency itself and worked with Cornell University, particularly working with agroterrorism and biological terrorism. And spent a lot of time out in New Mexico and Nevada State, as well as the Center for Domestic Preparedness in Anniston, Alabama, working, developing, and training with those various type programs. As you know, today, terrorism is in everybody's mind, and I bring those skills to the table if I'm elected sheriff.
That's good. I spent some time in Anniston, Alabama, the Military Police Academy.
Yes, a very interesting place to be.
It is. So, your platform, we had talked last night at the Conservative Party meeting, and what do you think you could do to better our county?
One of the areas it's on everybody's mind, I brought a copy actually of it with me, is our 2018-2019 budget. As a member of the Board of Supervisors, it's paramount that we be involved with the sheriff as well as other agencies within the county. They all come under the same umbrella, Ontario County. And the Sheriff's Department is a portion of that and consumes a large portion of that budget by virtue of almost 300 employees. It will be incumbent upon whoever the next sheriff is to have a working relationship with the Board of Supervisors, as well as the Public Safety Committee, Personnel, Ways and Means, and the various committees within Ontario County. As you know, we have the tax cap, and again, it's a working relationship. It's all part of one formula, working with the Board of Supervisors, County Administrator, to maintain that tax cap formula if we can, as well as deliver good services to the citizens of Ontario County.
Mr. Green, what do you think is going well right now in the county in terms of law enforcement, and what do you think could be improved upon?
One of the biggest areas of concern, I think we have all been touched in it in one shape or another, is this opiate heroin crisis. And I'll give you a personal experience. In our town recently, and I won't be more specific than that, but recently we had two opiate deaths in a six-day period in the little town of Bristol. The Sheriff's Department also has been very active in fighting this epidemic, but it's a collaborative effort with not only the sheriff working with other law enforcement agencies, but is working with mental health, even Child Protective Services, and the other various ancillary agencies within the county to address the situation with inmate population. As you may know, roughly 70% and sometimes closer to 80% of the inmates that come into that county jail have mental health issues or drug overdose, or I'm sorry, drug addiction issues. One of the biggest challenges for the next sheriff will be to make sure that we adequately address those issues in training with our staff, and they are doing a very good job. Phil Pavro, the sheriff, as well as jail administration, working very hard to train the individuals so when those inmates come in with these issues, that they're able to address them and steer them into programs, into programs that may benefit those individuals. There is no silver bullet out there for addiction. Heroin, once it has its claws into individuals, is a dangerous animal. It's like that wolf that sinks its teeth into your arm and just will not let go. So we've seen individuals who've been through rehab two, three, four times who are not able to break those bonds. And unfortunately, they end up in the criminal justice system, which in of itself creates issues for their families and creates issues for us as citizenry within the county. It also leads to increase in crime rate, and we have seen a number of arrests at, and I'll take Eastview Mall for example, where the shoplifting, there's a direct pathway, direct correlation between that shoplifting and that person's addiction. It's a tough field to hoe. Everybody is looking for answers. Last year, the sheriff and I, in January 2017, the sheriff and I attended a three-day sheriff's conference in Albany. In talking to other sheriffs, we found that this is throughout the state, and all the sheriffs face the same issues: inmates, drug addiction. How do we rehab these folks so they don't come back into the system?
Okay, great. And what are some things that you think the county, in terms of the sheriff's office, Mr. Pavaro, has done very well, something that you would probably leave alone at this point?
The approach to the inmate population, if that's what you're referring to. Again, they're addressing it with mental health and the other agencies within the county. But I feel very strong in saying that the sheriff's office is very well run. They're constantly updating their training, and I think they're very aggressive in going after the drug dealers in the county. I feel very strong about saying that. And there's a very strong collaborative effort with all the agencies within the county. That's the state police, the two city agencies. You may have drug enforcement agencies, federal level agencies, and there's a very good working relationship there. I want to keep that.
Okay, excellent, excellent. And your experience, was that road patrol in the courts or in the jail when you were with the sheriff's office?
I have touched every agency within the sheriff's office.
Okay.
The communications center, the jail, road patrol, CID, marine and recreation. I have touched everything. And in saying that, I've also worked with the accreditation process. That accreditation process sets standards within the sheriff's office. That's very important. Citizens look to that. What is your standard? And it gives us a bar to shoot for. And I worked with a number of individuals, contributed to it, and we have a very fine document now. We also have accreditation within the court system, within the jail, and our civil division, as well as our uniform division. Again, important. We were one of the first agencies to reach that level of accreditation in New York State. We're very fortunate. We have a very strong Sheriff's Association here in New York State, New York State Sheriff's Association, which, they all work together and seeking answers to common problems. I can say to you also, in my years there, I was responsible for one of the largest marijuana drug seizures in the history of this county, and it turned out to be 98 pounds of marijuana.
Wow.
I wanted to ask you, what was this, if you know, what would be the street value of something like that?
Oh, boy. That I don't know.
We got to get our local drug dealer in here.
Mike, you got me on that one. I do not know what the going rate is right now, but I can tell you heroin, which, again, is just seized us by the arm with teeth in it. You can buy a packet of heroin roughly for the same price as a six-pack of beer.
That's a shame, because it's so affordable, and that's one of the major problems.
Exactly.
With heroin. It's absolutely too affordable. Cocaine was maybe a rich man's drug or something, but in marijuana, you know, you could grow your own, but... And then there's synthetic marijuana.
Yes.
And synthetic drugs that are now a huge problem.
Synthetic drugs, and your point is very well taken. I do a section, I still teach at the Finger Lakes Law Enforcement Academy every year, and one of the sections that I teach on and do a presentation is the synthetic drugs. Again, there's something that are available, you can buy them on the internet, and the regulations and trying to snag these people, it's tough when you're dealing over the internet and U.S. mail. People access this very easily.
Now, when you mentioned that you worked with outside organizations to help rehab the people that are being arrested, are they such organizations as local ones like Flagross or Keys Behavioral Health? What kind of organizations?
Bingo, you nailed it. FLACRA, but we also have an organization called Partnership for Ontario County, and I'm on the board of directors for that, and we meet roughly once a month. These people are very proactive. There's a young lady by the name of Petrea Ray who travels throughout the county. She's putting on seminars within our high schools. She has touched every high school in this county. And the partnership has made this a number one area of concern. And education is huge for our young people. They have brought in speakers who are recovering drug addicted individuals, and that has a huge impact upon our young people when somebody stands up there and says, it's a day-to-day battle for me. And it is. These are individuals that never really shake it. They fight it. They know they want to fight it. They know they want to beat it. They know how it affects their families and themselves as individuals, their employers. So it's very powerful when an individual like that stands in front of a class of 100, 200, 300 individuals and says, don't go down this road.
Could you tell us what you and I talked last night about how the heroin addict, it destroys their dopamine release?
Certainly. There's, a lot of interesting literature out there right now. And Mike, I failed to say I am a paramedic also, and I still do some per diem work within one of the local hospital systems. So I'm exposed to a lot of the literature that comes out on this, and also exposed to a number of doctors who have done their own exploration on this situation. Heroin, they believe right now, enters the brain and destroys the ability of the brain to produce dopamine. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter. That dopamine also is kind of the feel-good drug, along with serotonin and other drugs that are produced naturally within the human body. For example, we have a piece of chocolate. We get a little bit of that's a feel-good thing. When we eat, that's a feel-good thing. But if we destroy the ability of the brain by way of the heroin, now that the recovery becomes way beyond anything that we can think of. And that's why the claws are in there, because the body physiologically is looking for, I want to feel good. And if you cannot produce that within your own body, now we're looking for the heroin. That's tough.
What a tragedy to have a drug that affects your ability to ever feel good.
Correct.
And the heroin doesn't actually produce that. I guess.
Well, what it does, it destroys your ability,
right,
to produce that within the human body, and it replaces it. That's the replacement.
But once you take that away, you don't get it back?
The current scientific research is right now, you do not get that back.
So, Bob Green, do you think they should raise the level of prosecution for a drug dealer, especially maybe a heroin drug dealer? What I mean by that, it would be a different than just, I know there's a conviction for being a dealer, but maybe something like a harder sentence or a larger crime, maybe it's a felony, something like that?
I think we would have to take some scientific data to see if truly a harder crime, or I'm sorry, a harder sentence works. And one side of me says, I agree with you to make it a harder sentence. However, we also need to understand that at least the lower level heroin dealers are dealing to deal with their own drug addiction. And it becomes a very complicated matrix. How do we deal with this? I do think that we have to come down harder. But we also need to look at it in a case-by-case situation. Is this somebody who was already hooked and they're out there doing a number of drug sales to secure their own habits? If you will, even prostitution is a way of paying for heroin epidemic addiction that they have. How do we handle that? Again, is it a case-by-case scenario? Everybody has different avenues in life, and we have to address each individual.
That's great.
I want to come back to Mr. Green's background. So you're supervisor town of Bristol.
Yes.
Retired from the sheriff's office, rank of lieutenant.
Yes.
And now you want to run for sheriff. So it seems like you've been in the public sector for a while. What makes you want to run for sheriff now instead of remaining, you know, retired, collecting a pension? You're a supervisor. What makes you want to put your hat back in the ring and run for something like this?
Simple. It's home to me. I spent my life there. I did not seek outside employment. I did not go to other agencies. I stayed here. It was my life. It was, and still is, because I still help the sheriff with grants and fund directions. I think we need to understand that the office of the sheriff is only is a position in of itself that is an administrative position, and you need to have a working relationship understanding this, a budget, understanding what grants are available. And we've been able to secure some very good grants for the sheriff's office through Homeland Security, through other agencies within the state of New York, as well as federal agencies. The issue for me is it's personal. I love it. Always had a passion for it. And my wife will say to me once in a while, she'll say, "You miss it, don't you?" I say, "Yeah. Yeah, I do."
How long have you been retired?
retirement is... you got me. Retirement is not in my vocabulary. How's that? Good enough?
Okay.
That's not in my vocabulary. No, I retired in 98 officially. I stayed on another 10 years part-time. Working within, particularly teaching. I enjoy teaching, and one of my goals will be to help mentor, hopefully, the next generation of sheriffs. We pass on. Nobody is here permanently, but we need to pass on skill sets to prepare that next generation of sheriffs, and that will be a top priority for me. Who's coming in behind me? And I want them to be better than I am.
Great.
That's great. That's the sound of a leader.
Thank you.
I wanted to say quickly that we have a comment from Marianne Faith. Fix the mental health treatment problem, and the drug problem will resolve also. People with mental health issues just want relief of the mental anguish they feel. And I'm a correctional nurse myself, and I see where you're coming from and how you need the outside
with this addiction, but I'm also finding in the correctional setting that we had an influx of veterans coming in.
Yes.
And that's something that really is sad, because their PTSD is being not, you know, worked on and helped with their mental health.
And that's an excuse me, that's an excellent question and a very excellent comment from, I'm sorry, Faye?
Melissa,
I'm sorry.
No, Marianne. I believe that's
right. Okay, from Marianne. Very valid question. I'll put a personal touch on this. I have a son who was seriously wounded in Iraq in 2006, who spent time with VAs dealing with PTSD as well as physical injuries. So I have a home with that. I understand the pain. The Veterans Court, which is new to this county, I think we're one of the leaders in having a Veterans Court which specifically addresses veterans and giving them direction. Remember what I said earlier about everybody, life deals everybody a different deck of cards. And I think we do have to, the compassion that has to be forefront in our thinking and understanding of how different circumstances brought our veterans to these addictions, and we need to address that. The mental health issues, again, it's huge. I don't have the proverbial silver bullet. What I do know is we're moving in the right direction. We're trying to find the answers to it. If somebody out there has the silver bullet, please pass it on to us, because we're all searching for it. All the sheriffs are, all the mental health people that are working in that part of the world, the even child abuse. We've seen a direct correlation in child abuse because of drug addictions. It affects everybody. We as a society are finding ourselves searching in an area that maybe not a lot of us have expertise, but with the Veterans Court, and we have Drug Court, and the District Attorney's Office, and all the agencies within the county are working together. And I think we need to hold that at the forefront. We need to be proud of the fact that they are all working together.
Now, you have some competition for Office of Ontario County Sheriff with Silvio Palermo and Kevin Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think sets you apart from those that you're running against, and what would make you a better sheriff?
Two fine individuals, and I will present my credentials. I'm going to step into an area you might not hear often from politicians. I do not want to get into a mudslinging contest, and I don't think either one of them want to either. The sheriff's office, that's a position of that demands respect, and everybody is respectable. But I think I bring the experience of multi-agency workings with Homeland Security, having been on the County Board of Supervisors, Chairman of Public Safety. I understand all the spokes of the wheel. As I said earlier, the sheriff needs to have the understanding of this, a budget. What makes a place work? The sheriff does not go out and write speeding tickets, although there's probably once in a while Phil Pavro will tell you he would like to. But his or her job. But his or her job is to make sure that the men and women who are so dedicated to the sheriff's office have the tools necessary and training necessary to make that place function. That's the job of the person at the top. Mike, when you were in the service, did a two-star go out and drive the tanks?
No, sir.
No. The NCOs,
that's right.
The enlisted. But it was his or her job at the top to make sure that you had the diesel fuel and you had everything that you needed to make the place, the United States Marine Corps or the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, Coast Guard, guard units, whatever, to make sure that those men and women have the tools necessary.
That's right.
That's the position of the Office of Sheriff.
Speaking of the tools necessary, Canandaigua just budgeted some money for body cameras for police officers. What's your take on body cameras for the Sheriff's Department?
Good question. It's I think ultimately we will end up with that. But to say it's a great thing and to make it functional is another, and here's why. During the conference last year, during the Sheriff's Conference, both the Sheriff and I sat in on one of the lectures of the day, the conference sessions, and that was on body cameras. We've also discussed this at the New York State Association of Counties, and I attend that twice a year. And I sit there and I listen to other county administrators and as well as the sheriffs. There's one problem, significant problem. Data storage. It's huge. And you have to have in place rules and regulations what gets stored. The other issue for it, too, is how much it should be public and how much should be private. And here's why. You have a family situation where there's a disagreement between mom and dad, whatever, and it rises to the level of having to have the sheriff or law enforcement intervene. Is that something that started in the home that is private? Is that accessible? I don't know. That's a question that will have to be met to put a proper ending to it, because I just don't think sometimes that private fights, if you will, or disagreements within a home that don't rise to the level of criminality, is that something that the public should have access to? There's a level of private. So we have to have very strict rules in place. To answer your question, I'm not against it, but we need rules of engagement.
I agree. Well, thanks, very much, Bob Green, running for Ontario County Sheriff for 2018. We thank you for being on our show, and we wish you good luck.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Hope you'll be back again.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Hopefully it'll be warmer weather.
Tune in every Saturday morning, 8 to 10 a.m., for Three Men and a Microphone and a Lady. Hear all about local news, politics, fishing report, and sports, as well as all the talk about town and the scuttlebutt in the city. To keep up on the show, stay connected and visit us on Facebook at Canandaigua 1310 Three Men and a Microphone. Presented each week, Saturday 8 to 10 a.m. and Sunday afternoons at 2 p.m. Sponsored by the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. And to catch up on past episodes, go to IronMikesMX.com or WOKR 1310.